Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. For more on our 2021 offers, contact your local Kia dealer or log on to kia.com.
1850-715-815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. And it's Joe at RT.ie. You'll understand why we've changed everyone's name in the next call. And Rachel, obviously not her real name, has contacted us. And Rachel, you've contacted us, good afternoon, about your two children who you say are suffering with anxiety and depression. And you believe it's because of the last 9 months, because of the COVID pandemic and everything that's come with it.
That's right, Joe. I have two daughters. One was diagnosed with anxiety in the summer through the CAMHS psychiatric services. And then my other daughter was diagnosed with depression yesterday by the GP.
And the daughter that was diagnosed with anxiety, what age is she?
She's 11.
And the child with depression?
13.
Wow. Okay, so what brought you to the diagnosis? What prompted you to get help?
Well, I suppose in the summer with my younger daughter, she was crying a lot. She was crying herself to sleep. It was happening almost on a daily basis, and I knew that something was really wrong. So, with my older daughter, I suppose I've just seen her get progressively quieter, enjoy her life less, not want to meet friends. And I know we're under restrictions at the moment, but not want to go to the park, for example, with a friend, that type of thing. Talk about complained of just not enjoying anything. Loss of appetite. She's gotten very thin. And difficulty concentrating and just a general, I suppose, really increasing sadness, in her body language.
Yeah. And then the child that was diagnosed with depression yesterday.
That's right.
So one diagnosed with anxiety, one diagnosed with depression. And do they link it to COVID, or do you link it to COVID and everything that's gone with it, the social isolation?
Yeah, I do. I feel that it's been so strange for them. And I just feel that age group suffers more from the lack of socialising than us older people do. Their friends are everything to them at that age. And so to deprive them of the contact that they normally have, it's going to have a detrimental effect on their mental health. And, I had to contact the school today to let them know about my daughter's diagnosis. And I spoke to the year head, and she said that in an 18-year teaching career that she's never seen the like of it. She's never seen so many students with anxiety and depression. And I suppose it's something that I'm aware of as well, just in the locality, in the wider family, in the school community. I just seem to be hearing so much more about it, and I'm seeing it in my own immediate family. And I suppose I contacted your show because I feel like we're not hearing about it. And I feel we should be hearing about it more. That can only be a good thing.
And is all... we'll talk about school in a sec, but is all the extracurricular activities that young people have, are they gone? Like dance classes sports?
Dance classes are gone in the sense that you can't go to your dance class. So... You can do a Zoom dance class, but that's not going to have the same kind of social benefits that your normal dance class would have had. Other things just aren't taking place. The likes of drama and those type of arts type of classes aren't taking place. As far as I know, it's outdoor training that's taking place. So I suppose if your young person is more of a sporty child, they'll still be able to continue with that,
You mentioned friends and schoolmates. What are you hearing through your children, or through your own relatives and friends, about the effect on other young people, 11, 12, 13, 14?
I suppose I'm just aware of other cases like my daughter's, you know, to a greater number than I ever would have been aware of in my own circle. You know, it feels like this is a new thing, that this isn't, you know, that this is an increased level of mental health disorders.
And then... And is that how young people are showing it? Through anxiety, through this introversion, as you say, not wanting to meet friends?
Yeah. I think, like, you know, it's not always that easy to maybe spot the signs of depression. So they do tend to spend a lot of time online anyway. And, you never really get a teenager particularly wanting to hang out with their parents maybe that much anyway, so maybe it's a bit hard to spot, but I suppose
and I'm very conscious of
check in with them.
Of client confidentiality. But did you attend the services with your two daughters separately, obviously, do?
Yeah.
Okay.
I did.
Had you heard it all before, in terms of had your daughter already confided, either daughter already confided in you the issues that had arisen? I presume you were allowed to sit in for the sessions, not the protocol.
Group, well, yeah. With my younger daughter, she confided almost everything to me before we actually saw the psychiatrist. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there was one very distressing moment where she did confess, and myself and my husband were there, she did confess to having thoughts of self-harm and wanting to cut her arms. And that was, you know, I suppose the first time I had heard of it, it was just something that she maybe hadn't just felt able to tell us, you know, until we were there. And, you know, she had also had suicidal thoughts about throwing herself out the window. So it's just very, very sad to hear your beautiful child, you know,
and then
talking about these very painful feelings, you know.
And what about treatment?
So in the case of my younger daughter, we just really, well, we attended CAMHS a few times. She did a small amount of cognitive behavioural therapy, which is an anxiety treatment. But we also made changes in her life. So really anything that we felt that was an actual cause or a potential cause of anxiety, we changed it. So in her case, that involved changing her school.
Oh, did it, yeah.
And that's worked out really well for her. And I have to say that her new school has been absolutely fantastic. Since she started, you know, in sort of minding their well-being, you know, they've been really conscious of minding the children's well-being in the class.
And is there is there anything you heard that might be of use to other parents, Rachel?
I suppose I just want to put it out there that if you can have it in your mind that, you know, that this is something that is frightening for parents. It's frightening to think of your child suffering from a mental health disorder. It's those words are quite scary. But what I would like to say is that while those disorders like anxiety and depression, if they're not treated, they're really debilitating. They are so treatable, and that even talking about it with your child will help them so much.
Yeah.
Allowing them to actually express their darkest, deepest worries to you will really help to mitigate them, and to go to your GP. And that, you know, they're completely treatable.
Okay, well that's
don't be put off talking about it. You know, I think it's more important than ever.
Yeah, well, that's a strong message, that is completely treatable. Has anything have you ever had to deal with issues like that before in your life? So it's been not in terms of your family, Rachel.
Yeah, absolutely. I personally have. I have had depression and been successfully treated for depression.
Great. And that's the message as well, that people can be. regardless of their age, successfully.
I suppose they're just, you know, I think stigma is decreasing, and I hear that it's decreasing even more so among young people, and that's absolutely fantastic.
Is it? Yeah, okay.
You know, well, mental health disorders are really no different than a physical illness, and, you know, while they're invisible, they're debilitating, but they're treatable. So I suppose that's what I wanted to say.
And do you think young people are talking about those pressures?
No, I don't think they are. Among themselves? A little bit. I actually don't think that either of my daughters were talking much about it. You know, so not necessarily.
Yeah. How long were you waiting to see CAMHS?
2 or 3 weeks. It was very short, actually.
Yeah.
We kind of got an emergency appointment.
Yeah, but that, given what we hear, sometimes that's not too bad. And for other parents to watch out for signs of depression in a child, what would you be watching out for? Or would it become become evident?
Yeah, I think you have to talk to them a lot. You have to spend time with them, and you have to notice even small changes in their demeanour, their body language, their appetite, in what they talk about, you know, and just, you know, are they talking about looking forward to things? Do they feel they have things to look forward to? Are they getting enjoyment from their day? You know, are they struggling to concentrate? Are they tired more often?
Yeah.
I'm not a psychologist, so I'm sure possibly a better description than that. But, you know, so those signs can be kind of subtle because, you know, a teenager could show any of those kind of signs and possibly not be depressed. So we think you have to have a really close eye on them, and then you have to be able to talk to them and, you know, and I suppose for them to feel that they can safely confide in you and be able to reassure them that, you know, there's help for them.
Yeah.
And you're not supposed to feel like that.
And the effect it's had on the parents, Rachel, you, for example.
Yeah, it's very difficult particularly when your child is waiting to have an appointment for diagnosis or, you know, for treatment. You know, really everything just revolves around that child. Like any other household, I think, where a child is sick, it's like normal family life kind of stops and everything revolves around them, really. And, you know, it's very difficult.
Okay,
yeah,
but it's
and it takes all the attention off the other children in the family when one child is, you know, not well. Yeah,
and you have to be careful. But I hope the two of them get well and get well very, very quickly. They sound they're incapable, the capable embrace of yourself and indeed the services, Rachel. Fingers crossed. And thank you for raising the issue. That was Rachel talking about her two daughters. Obviously, that's not her name.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
We were talking to a mother at the start of the programme, Rachel, who spoke about her two daughters, 11 and 13, and the difficulties they're having during the lockdown going on and off, but effectively going on now for 9 months in terms of the change in their lives. 11 and 13, one now diagnosed with depression, the other, the second child, with anxiety. Anne, good afternoon. You're a teacher and you say in the last week, I had four different young women.
Mm-hmm. Hi, Joe. Good afternoon. Yeah, no, I'm a year head in a school. I'm a teacher and a year head. So I would be over a group of sort of 14, 15-year-old secondary school students, all girls. I've been teaching over 25 years. I've seen a massive increase in anxiety and depression and issues such as self-harm, suicide ideation, huge increase in this in the last sort of 5 to 10 years.
And in what age group, Anne?
We've been talking about from first year up, from 12 right up to 18.
Okay.
This year, I've sort of started off with my first years. My group are now 14, 15. And it's not shown any signs of getting any better. First year tends to be kind of issues around body image, how they see themselves. Social media issues are huge. In fact, I blame a lot of it on the use of mobile phones, having a mobile phone at a very young age, and not having the emotions to cope with what they see or what they have to, I suppose, put up with friends, with bullying, cyberbullying, all of that. I just, and when I talk to my students, they would often agree and say, yeah, a lot of it is down to us having social media and being contactable 24 hours a day. They take their phones to bed with them at night. So they're constantly switched on. There's never any downtime. And, you know, when we watched programs like Into the Wild, I think it was David Coleman did a great program taking teens out to the wild for a week. So, you know, it was a great program on helping troubled teens. A lot of my students would have said, God, I wish I could do that. I wish I could switch off. I wish somebody would take me to a remote island where I could just, you know, escape it all. It just feels like there's no escape. Like, I'm a teacher by trade, but in my capacity as year head, I would listen and talk and counsel a lot of my students. There's a real crisis. It's endemic. And, you know, when I talk to friends...
In terms of the last 9 months and since March, the week before St. Patrick's Day, when the lockdown kicked in. What differences have you seen?
Well, it was very difficult for everybody, obviously, for our students, our more vulnerable students. The online learning caused massive problems for many who didn't have correct devices or Wi-Fi, even just the technical side of things. But then the social isolation, the not being able to see their friends. You know, I have children myself. I know what that what they're going through, not being able to do, like your caller said, or not being able to do their dance class, their drama, their, you know, whatever. It's very, very difficult on them. But I think, just like your caller said, talk therapy, communication, keeping the lines of communication open. You know, I have a 10-year-old who wanted an iPod. In that, with that iPod, she could text and talk to friends. I've taken it off her because within 3 weeks of owning this iPod and being contactable with her little primary school friends, I could see a change in her behaviour, change in her mood. You know, it's I know we live in a modern age and it's the reality of young people's lives, but I think if parents could have boundaries, you know, with our younger teens, take the phones off them at night, take, you know, try and create boundaries, I really think that would be helpful. I feel that.
And you mentioned four different girls in the last week, young women. Like, what prompted them to come to you?
Well, we'd have that kind of, I do kind of a chat and connect, whereby I would tap in with the students that would be on my TLC list, if you like, that I would know would have issues and problems. And some might be attending CAM. So we would provide, you know, as your head, you have hours to deal with these issues and problems. And one girl said to me that I don't feel there's any point in me being here anymore. Another, you know, would talk to me about the self-harming. It's quite shocking, really. I mean, yes, for me, I'm so used to hearing about it now that you just kind of adopt a practical approach and you listen and you make them feel understood and heard, and obviously reach out and seek the supports that are out there, like your Jigsaw, CAMS, obviously the counsellors within the school as well. Because there's only so much that I can do in my role, but it's another. Was not a pandemic, but it is widespread.
Okay, so say what is on Margaret's in Kilkenny. Okay. Margaret, your position on this, please, your story.
I just rang you today because I have a 15-year-old daughter who is going through the exact same thing as the first caller rang in about, and as what this teacher is saying. And I think the social media has an awful lot to do with it, an overload to the system. As that teacher said, 24/7 access to the children. But I also think that this lockdown is doing detrimental damage to our youth. My daughter in particular is a very energetic girl, does karate, Irish dancing, ballet, and all of those have been cut dead. And all that energy. She's been doing this since she was 4 or 5. So this is week in, week out. Every single week since she was 4 or 5. And in the last 9 months, it's just been stopped. Now, most of these companies that do these hobbies, etc., they have adhered to every single rule that's been brought in by the government. We've been campaigning with ballet teachers, we've been campaigning with Irish dancing teachers, to the TDs and the government, and nobody is listening. Yeah. If social distancing is being adhered to, if the wash the hands and the all the rest of it is, why can't our kids go and meet their friends and get their social energy out there? It's as if they want them to be on the phones, because there's nothing else to do. You go to school, you come home, you do your homework. But, you know, at least when they had hobbies, it was an area you knew that they were out interacting with other people, using their excess energy. But at the minute, and I'll tell you, from, and I'm sure that teacher will agree with me, it's so bad that my daughter has actually had to go back a year in school.
Oh, God. And why is that, Margaret?
Because it's totally overwhelmed her. Yeah. It's just, she just doesn't know how to cope without it. And she's only 15.
And do you put that down to the pandemic?
I put it down to the pandemic and everything being pulled from her. Yeah, because all she has is school. And even at school, they're going around wearing masks. They're not allowed to congregate. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know yourself, like, it's just from a very sociable butterfly to a person who must be masked up all the time. I just don't think it's good for our kids. I really, really don't. And I just see in my own experience, my heartfelt experience, and I've seen her confidence go way down, way, way down. Now, I rang the school. The school have been brilliant. But thank God for the school.
Yeah. So,
but I just see there's no mental health structures being put aside for our children or for ourselves, for that matter, you know. I mean, I was never, in past years, great for going out pubbing. But I miss going out for a meal and having social interaction with other people. We can't stay locked up forever.
But the government argument about the schools was they were going to which they did do. They were going to prioritise reopening the schools in September, which they did, which was a massive logistical challenge. We were going to prioritise reopening the schools rather than pubs and restaurants.
But would you not think that for certain students, ballet, Irish dancing and graffiti are just as big on the syllabus as geography, Irish and English?
Well, what about whatever about Irish dancing and ballet? But karate is a close contact sport, isn't it?
Well, no, because you can do your katas.
Okay.
There's lots you can be doing without moves, getting into. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, you don't have to be doing your committees or anything like that. You can be practicing. But I mean, to just stop it dead. You see, my daughter would love to be a dancer. But how can she be a dancer? Like, and Zoom is great, but it's not the same as being present in a class.
Especially, well, for every age group, but especially for that age group that just love each other and have forever embracing each other. And anyway,
and friends are the most important thing in the world at 15.
Absolutely. Dr. Candice Condon has contacted us. Candice, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Good. You're a psychologist. So anxiety and depression, have you noticed changes in that age group, 12 to 16, 17?
Yeah, so I originally, I sent a brief email there when your first caller came through, Rachel.
Yeah.
And it was mainly in response to just, you know, the way the segment was opened, that, you know, the names had to be changed the children that she was talking about. So I... You know, the first thing that struck me was this is more adding to the shroud of secrecy and shame that surrounds mental health, and that we're trying to, a lot of us are trying to break down. But, you know, having spoken to your research, they said that was illegal, you know, reasons for that, and that's fair enough. But, this is our third wave. You know, mental health of the Irish people, their suffering is our third wave now. And I've been writing about this through staff blogs in our college. I'm a lecturer since near the start of this pandemic. Children are suffering. They don't have the cognitive development to realise and be able to rationalise that we need to do this for the benefit of others. And I've had, you know, people that I know of that have had COVID-19, so it's not reducing the importance of that physical health. But there's this battle that's going on between mental health and physical health. They're not mutually exclusive.
Yeah.
You know, you have one without the other. And we're trying to break down this stigma so that there can be more support. There's not enough. The government are not doing enough. There's nobody talking about this. Children have had their pastimes taken away, their sports, their dance. I'm also an Irish dancing teacher. That's my other hat. And it's completely safe, you know, to do so every step, but that's all gone. And we're seeing, I'm in college, we're seeing students now in third level. I was saying to my first years today, give yourselves a pat on the back, you know, a boule of us, because you've got through the first semester now of online learning, which if I was a student, I don't know how I could face it, but they've adapted. But they're suffering. They're on the screen from morning to evening.
Yeah.
And then if they go out and meet friends, you know, they're breaking rules. There's videos of them if they're out drinking, or if they're out meeting, or they're, you know, socially interacting. But we need it. We're social animals.
And you know, the problem I understand, Candice, is that you can't change the regulations as they are at the minute.
No.
But in terms of you being able to help, what would you advise?
There are supports out there, and yes, there needs to be supports, but there are some really good supports. So Aware are amazing. You know, aware.ie. If you don't feel comfortable talking about anxiety and depression, that's often the nature of these disorders. You feel like you're alone. You feel like there's no one else suffering. But everyone at every age will experience anxiety and depression at some stage, or their family member will. That's the statistics. That's the real life. That's what's happening. So Aware are amazing. You can go online. Samaritans are amazing.
Okay.
But there's another problem. Our first port of call is always our GP. Now, what's happening when you call a GP with mental health issues? And I know this is happening on the ground. People are being told that they're not being seen by their GP, or at best, they're getting a Zoom or a Teams call. It's not the same. People don't feel comfortable with this. It might be the first time they ever talk about mental health, and it's happening over a call virtually. That's just not the nature of mental health. That's not how it works. This is a big thing for someone to speak about, especially a young person who feels like they're looking at social media, they're looking at the perfect life. Everyone looks really happy. You know, they have so much stresses in their life anyway. And now they're feeling like, I should be okay with this. This is expected of me. I want to do my part. But the mind is not logical at times.
Yeah.
You know, the brain doesn't always work like that. These are mood disorders. If you're talking about depression, they're anxiety disorders. If we're talking about generalized anxiety disorders, they don't work with logic. We know things are logical when we're suffering with these disorders, but it doesn't always work that way. So, you know, reach out for help. But when you reach out, you often come up against a brick wall. So, you know, CAMHS are amazing. Child and Mental Health Adolescent Services are great if you can get an appointment with them. Otherwise, people are on waiting lists for 18 months plus. It's very costly to see a psychologist privately or a psychiatrist, whoever your GP recommends. But the first port of call in Ireland at the moment is our GP. And at the moment, we're being turned away. And it's not, they're like, GPs are doing amazing work, and everyone's under pressure at the moment. But you're being told if you have certain symptoms, you can't come to the office. But also, there's people who don't have any of those symptoms who are also being turned away. And we know that's happening. So where do they turn then? So it's down to the charities and voluntary non-governmental organisations then. And that shouldn't be the case. We need to break down this stigma and just talk about it like it's a broken leg.
Yeah,
you don't tell someone with a broken leg. You don't say, get over it. You don't point out the amazing life they have. You know, you have a great family, you have a great friends, you have a great job.
Yeah.
You got into your college course that you wanted, you know. You didn't have to sit to leave and search. We can say all that, but that's not how it works if you're suffering with your mental health. It doesn't register.
Okay. Point.
You know, it's from the top down that this needs to be taken seriously. This is our third wave. We're hearing every day about the numbers of COVID-19. We're hearing about the hospitals and the ICU. Are we hearing the reports of the suicide numbers every week or every day? We have to search for them, but they're out there. The statistics are out there, you know, and this just, it needs to be taken. I don't know whether it's within government, within the Department of Health, they don't have the interest or the expertise. No one knows what it is. You know, we're constantly saying what's happening. We can do the research in psychology. The research is done, but it has to trickle down to policy.
But there's no database because of the complexities of it that would give you a day-to-day breakdown of death by suicide.
There are ways that we can find statistics.
Yeah, I know, it's usually deaths. Coroner's courts at the end of every 3 months or whatever, but I take your point.
Within psychological research, those that do research there, we can find out. But
I agree with you, any of the studies that I've read in the last few months, be it reports of the Lancet or whatever, have said that there has been an increase in mental health pressures on young people during the pandemic. So that's what you've discovered as well. Thanks, Niamh. That's Dr. Candice Condon.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie. Rebecca, good afternoon. The conversation prompted by a call at the start of the programme for obvious reasons, Rachel, as we called her, didn't want to identify who she was or indeed her children, for their sake and other people's sake as well. But she's an 11 and a 13-year-old daughter. And both of them in the last short while, up to yesterday, one had been diagnosed with anxiety and the other child with depression. Rebecca is in Enniscorthy. Your story, please, Rebecca.
Hi, Joe. My child is 12. It's all come to a head quite quickly. Now, for years, I was looking for help.
Okay.
CAMHS decided she needed a psychologist. Psychology decided she needed CAMHS. So because they were arguing she didn't get treatment when she was younger, she had a lot of fears and sensory issues and, you know, things like that. Then she's gone through grief in the last year. And then on top of that, the first lockdown didn't help anything because when they were saying that children were more inclined to pass on the virus, she took that to heart and she went into a room and she stayed in a room. Wouldn't leave a room, wouldn't go near people because she was terrified she was going to kill somebody, basically, by kind of passing on the virus.
Yeah, that was going around for a few weeks, that at the beginning. It feels like years ago. But at the beginning of the pandemic, and the argument was children were not getting it, but they could transmit it. But that was quickly debunked. But anyway,
it was, I explained that to her, but she takes these things to heart.
I understand the
issues with her and her head, like, and the way it works. By the time we came out to go back to school, she has missed so many days in school already.
Yeah,
she just refuses to go because she doesn't want to leave the house. You know, she has anxiety, she has mental health issues. She also has physical issues which can lead to chemical depression. But trying to get help is virtually impossible. Now, our own GP has looked for an urgent referral to CAMHS because she's now talking about self-harming and that we'd be better off without her.
And is she going to school?
Someday.
She attends someday.
She attends some days, and when she goes in, she will have a smile on her face because the type she'll hide as much as she can.
Yeah.
It's taken a lot for her to come out and actually discuss this with myself and her dad, you know.
And is there anyone in the family or friends group that has been affected by COVID?
No. Now, as I said, she's lost two people in the last year, not down to COVID.
Okay.
But I think it heightens her awareness of kind of how easy it is to lose people, like, you know.
And especially at that age, the experience of bereavement begins to resemble the experience of bereavement that most older people, which is loss and anger and upset and denial and then eventually acceptance. But it's a long road. Have you raised it with the school or has the school?
Oh, absolutely. Because obviously with her lack of attendance, and they're lovely. They've been so kind, you know, and they keep saying her mental health is more important at the moment. You know, which it is, but it's just trying to get her that help. You know, it seems impossible. And you see, being based in Wexford, originally when she was put on the CAMHS list, we had nobody here. we were one of the counties without.
The professional left and wasn't replaced. Yeah.
And then when he was replaced, I think what happened was the list was so long they were trying to kind of cut it down as much as possible, and said she needed psychology instead. And psychology said she needed them. So
yeah,
it's like kind of banging your head against a brick wall trying to get. And you know, it's bad enough when you're doing it for yourself or whatever, but your child, you know.
There's no greater accelerant than trying to do something for your child, realizing that they can be powerless. Okay.
If only there was a magic wand.
Yeah, if only. Everyone's saying that about this pandemic. But maybe the in terms of the vaccine is coming, but still the after effects of this pandemic will go on for generations. Generations, the last 9 months. Rebecca, thanks indeed and kind regards to you and your family. 1850 715 815.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.